The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
European leaders are today gathering in Paris for an emergency summit to discuss the efforts of the United States to cut Europe out of any negotiations on a peace deal in Ukraine. Many of the leaders had been attending the Munich Security Conference since last week, where Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky met with U.S. Vice President J.D. Vance and U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio. Prior to that meeting on Friday, U.S. Vice President J.D. Vance had this to say at the start of his keynote address to the Munich Security Conference, where, don't forget, the focus was supposed to be a Ukrainian peace deal.
The threat that I worry the most about vis-a-vis Europe is not Russia, it's not China, it's not any other external actor. And what I worry about is the threat from within, the retreat of Europe from some of its most fundamental values, values shared with the United States of America.
The threat from within Europe, according to J.D. Vance, the major issue, despite Russia currently invading a part of Europe. At the closing of the conference, outgoing chair of the Munich Security Conference, Christopher Hoeksen, had this response to J.D. Vance.
After the speech of Vice President Vance on Friday, we have to fear that our common value base is not that common anymore. I'm very grateful to all those European politicians that spoke out and reaffirmed the values and principles that they are defending. No one did this better than President Zelensky.
Praise for Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky from the outgoing chair, who also was criticizing J.D. Vance. Well, Zelensky spoke to Kirsten Welker on NBC's Meet the Press yesterday, and he was asked if Ukraine could survive without U.S. support.
Probably it will be very, very difficult. And of course, in all the difficult situations, you have a chance. But we will have low chance to survive without support of the United States.
Your concern being without U.S. military support, Ukraine would be vulnerable to another attack by Russia in another few years. Is that your concern?
Yes, I think this can be. This is really what he wants. He wants pause, prepare, trained, take off some sanctions because of ceasefire and etc.
He was then asked about NATO membership for Ukraine.
Well, I want to be very clear with NATO. For us and for everybody, it's the cheapest security guarantees. The cheapest for us, the cheapest for Europe, the cheapest for the United States, and the cheapest, really, for Russia. If we are not in NATO, it means that we will build NATO in Ukraine. Otherwise, we will not recognize the security guarantees.
President Trump said on Wednesday that restoring all of the territory seized by Russia since 2014 is unlikely. Are you willing to say here that you are prepared to formally cede some of the sovereign territory of Ukraine to Russia in order to stop the killing?
Judicially, we will not recognize. Everybody understands that it's out of constitution to recognize our occupied territory like territory of Russia. We will never do it. It's not about any negotiations. We will never speak about it.
Even Crimea, you seem to have acknowledged.
Yeah. Even Crimea, we will never recognize it. Because in years, all things which are Ukrainian will be Ukrainian. But maybe, I don't know when. But yes, we have to return it diplomatically. Yes, we can. If we are in NATO, it's understandable why diplomatically. It's very understandable. And of course, not to lose people, it's a good way, diplomatic way, to find a diplomatic way how to get back our land. And that's it. But the people are most important for today. That's why diplomatic way is good. But where we will have security guarantees.
And that's Volodymyr Zelensky talking to Meet the Press yesterday. I'm joined now by John O'Brennan, Professor of European Politics at Maynooth University. John, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Do you have an understanding of what Trump is up to?
Well, I think it's becoming clear this is the most perilous moment for Europe since the end of the Second World War. it may seem unbelievable to your average US conservative, think of Reagan supporters or Bush supporters, but what we are seeing evolve is an alliance between Washington, D.C. and Moscow. If you look at everything Trump has said in recent weeks, including about the negotiations, they boost Russia's hand inordinately. And this is completely consistent. If we go back to his first term, you will remember that infamous press conference that he gave in Helsinki with Putin. And he was asked, do you trust Putin? He said, yes. He was asked if he trusted his own security agencies and basically said no. So there's a really weird dynamic between Putin and Trump, and nobody knows the real nature of the relationship. For my own part, Pat, I have to say, I believe everything that was contained in Christopher Steele's infamous dossier that came out years ago. But none of that is really important right now because the threat to Ukraine is so grave and the threat indirectly to Europe similarly is so grave. And that's why I think we are seeing President Macron convene a subset of European leaders in Paris today.
But going back to that question of Trump being in Putin's pocket, being Putin's poodle, as they like to say, the nature of what Putin has over him, and it seems quite clear that he has something over him because he is acting not certainly in the interests of the United States, one would imagine. But people around him, I mean, what does Elon Musk want out of Russia? Does he just want more market share of the global everything?
Well, I think you've highlighted something really important. The thing that really unites Trump and Putin about Europe, they both want to break it up. Putin obviously wants to see the end of the European Union. He wants to see American troops out of Europe, as much and as many as possible of them. When Trump looks at Europe, he has referred to Brussels numerous times as a hellhole. What he objects to and what Musk objects to is regulation, that Brussels is the center of regulation of industry and of much of the tech world. Now, the United States has simply refused to regulate the social media sphere, for example. The EU has its new Digital Services Act, and Musk and other tech owners who have all thrown in their lot with Trump, their interests are directly threatened by the European Union. So I'm not surprised to see the kind of comments that Vance and Hegseth and others made in recent days, because their principal aim is to break up the European Union and to soften it up for US corporate power, along with other things.
Now, the speech by J.D. Vance, which was quite bizarre on many levels, but it's been suggested that this was aimed at the MAGA gang at home, that it really wasn't aimed at Europe, because it didn't make any sense. He got silence in the room. He didn't get as much as polite applause for any of his what he thought were great lines. So stony-faced is the only word for the reception he got in Munich. But really, when Trump appeared to sideline him and favouring Elon Musk over his almost invisible vice president, that this is seen as Vance's attempt to put himself back on the map as Trump's successor. Because Trump replied when asked, did he see Vance as a successor? He said, no, full stop.
Yeah. Well, we have to understand here what's happening at rapid pace in the United States. It's the complete unraveling of 250 years of US democracy. Trump and Vance, in my view, are out and out fascists. And the irony that he should make these statements about free speech in Munich, of all places, the place that Hitler came out of in 1919, and that he should try to lecture Europeans about the dangers of censoring speech. Last week, at the same time as he was doing this, remember, he had just said that the US administration should disregard court judgments that they don't like. They had gone after a number of judges who, for example, had intervened on the birthright citizenship executive order that Trump signed and prevented that from being operationalized. They refer to them as activist judges. And just as he was actually speaking in Munich, two Republican prosecutors in New York resigned because They said there was intolerable pressure coming from the new attorney general in Washington to interfere in the case of Eric Adams, the Democratic mayor of New York, who was accused of colossal corruption and who has become an ally of Trump. So they were doing all of this, literally trying to dismantle democracy block by block while he was speaking. And Musk, even this morning, we've seen that he has been actively blocking direct contact between users on Signal, which is an encrypted messaging app. Why? Because Signal has become a major tool of government workers who are trying to know and blow the whistle on the kind of things that Musk's Department of Government Efficiency is doing. We know that Musk also has given in to every request for censorship by authoritarian governments. So the notion that this guy is in Europe defending free speech, it's just for the birds. It's quite the opposite.
Now, it's interesting that you hear nothing from the Republicans. You know, they went to see Zelensky, all of them, including Lindsey Graham. They all were delighted to shake his hand while stabbing him in the back, which is quite extraordinary. But there's one U.S. senator who raised his head above the parapet. He was talking to Politico in Munich, and he referred to what Hegseth had done in conceding there'd be no NATO membership, there'd be no return of territories to Ukraine, as a rookie mistake. And then he went on to say the speech appeared to be written by someone like Tucker Carlson, and that he's as dumb as whatever. You know, so there's one lonely Republican voice beginning to critique what the administration is doing. Is the outrageous carry-on of Trump, Musk, Hegseth, Robert F. Kennedy, I'm sure he'll add to the chaos and confusion, and all the rest of them, is it likely to dismay many Republican politicians who might frustrate Trump's efforts?
I don't think there is anything like a significant constituency in the House or the Senate for that. What we have are complete sycophants. Lindsey Graham is perhaps the best example of this. J.D. Vance, remember, referred not so long ago to Trump as America's Hitler. They have all literally turned on a dime. And this is what happens when you get these charismatic demagogues. They literally force themselves on a political party. They turn it into a cult. And that's what the Republican Party is currently. So the prospect that at some point in time, these Republicans will find some kind of moral force and be able to speak out and do the kind of things that you're suggesting, I think that that's just not going to happen. If you look at Robert Kennedy's confirmation process in the Senate last week, for example, the only senator on the Republican side to vote against him was Mitch McConnell, who then came in for further traducement from Trump for doing that. But they approved people like Tulsi Gabbard. They approved Hegseth, who, as you said, has no qualifications of any kind for this post. So there seems to me very little evidence that this is anything other than a one-man band. And we are not likely, unless the economy gets into terrible trouble, to see any opposition emerging from the Senate or the House.
So the question is, it'll be back to the people again in a couple of years' time in the midterms, but also what's happening to people. We know grocery prices have gone up now because of bird flu. Egg prices are through the roof, and they are, in fact, scarce. Gas prices have gone up. Medicare, Medicaid have been affected. Veterans funding has been affected. You know, many of these people must have been MAGA voters.
I'm sure that's the case, and I hope some of them are now realizing how they have been betrayed by Trump. It was very obvious that this was going to happen. But the big problem that the United States faces is that because they now hold the levers of power, that is not just the presidency, but the Senate and Congress. And remember, they have a Republican-dominated 6-3 Supreme Court, which last year decided that the president should have complete and blanket immunity for every act he commits while he is president. There seems to me to be this envelopment going on, and this is typical of how authoritarianism develops. You go after the judges, you go after independent media, you go after universities, any and all sites of opposition, you then develop almost complete control over the media. And let's remember, this week we saw the Associated Press, for example, excluded from White House briefings because they dared to ask questions about the renaming of the Gulf of Mexico as the Gulf of America. That is typical of the kind of things that Viktor Orban, for example, did in 2010 when he came back to office in Hungary. And I have no doubt that it's going to result in rigging elections into gerrymandering of epic scale around the United States. So there's a big question about the elections for the midterms 2 years from now, about whether they'll go ahead in anything like the normal fashion that people have been used to over a very long period of time. The evidence suggests that by then, that the new administration will have so solidified its grip on power that they will not be, they may well be free elections, but they certainly may not be fair elections.
All right, John, thank you very much for joining us. John O'Brennan, who's Professor of European Politics at Maynooth University.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.